soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force. You are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, you will bring about the destruction of the German war machine, the elimination of Nazi tyranny over the oppressed peoples of Europe, and security for ourselves in a free world. Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely. But this is the year 1944. Much has happened since the Nazi triumphs of 1940-41. The United Nations have inflicted upon the Germans great defeats in open battle, man to man. Our air offensive has seriously reduced their strength in the air and their capacity to wage war on the ground. Our home fronts have given us an overwhelming superiority in weapons and munitions of war, and placed at our disposal great reserves of trained fighting men. The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck, and let us all beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking.
And now, commemorating the 70th anniversary of D-Day, June 6th, 1944, live from Normandy, France, Northern Nevada's own 99.1 FM Talk, here is Jerry Evans.
And a good morning to you. Let me do a test 1, 2, 3 and do a quick adjustment here on this end. And we are coming to you live from the town of Olgot, which is on the beach at Normandy. I'm standing at the bottom floor of a historic home looking out at a beautiful day. The weather has been pretty much cloudy and windy. In fact, one of the interviews that you'll hear a little bit later on, I was walking around a historic estate, Val Richet, and the woman who was living in the home when the German soldiers occupied the home kept repeating how similar that day was to D-Day, which was cold and windy, and the channel was rough. Today, it is absolutely beautiful. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon here. The sun is shining, and a couple of things I want to describe for you are the beaches here at the northern coast of France. It is, as you've heard, approximately when the tide is out, 1,000 yards of clear, open beach, and that's what the soldiers, the sailors, and the British, the Canadian, and the Americans had to get past to get to the German bunkers. Yesterday, I was in some of those German bunkers. I was at Omaha Beach at the American Cemetery there. It was a very moving experience. And one thing that you'll be happy to hear, the D-Day vets that were there, there were approximately 20, 25 vets that I saw there yesterday. They are treated like rock stars. Everybody wants their photo with a D-Day veteran. I spoke to one of them within a couple of 100 yards of where he stormed the beach, where he ran up the beach. He was trying to pick out some landmarks. The beach has changed since then, 70 years ago, as we commemorate D-Day and the 70th anniversary. His interview is coming up a little bit later. Some just characters from Britain, the Normandy Veterans Association. This is the last year that they will participate in the ceremonies, and I was at Sword Beach yesterday with some of the Normandy Veterans Association members. Just characters. Let me just say, the champagne was flowing. They were having a great time, and we've got some great conversations with them. And then a woman by the name of Pauline at Val Richet, that is the woman whose home was occupied by German soldiers, and she will tell you that it was, as a young girl, she thought it was interesting. It was fun, as she said, and she was actually part of the resistance. She and her sister had a great time playing with the soldiers and actually took some of their bullets and threw them into, she called it a lake. It was a pond on the property, a beautiful 500-acre historic property. And Craig, what do we have in Nevada? Maybe about a 150-year-old home, something like that?
Yeah, thereabouts. That would be
This home was built in 1150. That's the year 1150.
They just don't make them like they used to.
They just don't make them like they used to. They just can't stand up to the weather the way they did in France. This is a very historic place. And again, the home that I'm in, the town of Olgut, here on the northern coast, the Germans came in and they requisitioned these entire homes along the beach here. They took out the staircases and they made them essentially uninhabitable so that they could not be used. And that's the home I'm in today. Well, I know we're going to run out of time. We have Governor Sandoval is scheduled to join us at about 8:45, Congressman Mark Amadei at about 7:15. And we've got some interviews that we recorded, some just before we left. And so I want to get going with some of the interviews, and we will also take your calls if we get a chance, 884-9910. I brought a couple of emails with me from people from Nevada, and one of the emails from a woman down in Gardnerville area, Carol Wenzel, and I'm going to read that to you real quick and also let you and her know that I did do just that, and I took a picture of it, which I will bring back with me or email it. It says, I've been listening to the promotion of your live broadcast to be coming from Normandy Beach on June 6th. One of the highlights of my life was visiting the gravesite of my Uncle John at the Normandy American Cemetery on Memorial Day 2007. The new memorial building had not opened yet when we visited. It is open now. You should be in Plot J. Walk down to Row 17, Grave 26. Would you please acknowledge my dad's brother, Sergeant John M. Strobo, 120th Infantry, 30th Division from Chicago, Illinois, killed July 9, 1944 at St. Lô, France. I drove through there yesterday. His three nieces and two grandnephews honor him to this day. Sincerely, Carol. I have a picture of that graveside, of which my daughter, my wife, and I put some flowers there, and we will bring that back home to Nevada with us, as well as email the photo to you. So, Greg, if we could, before I left, I spoke to a veteran, 92 years old, living in Pocatello, Idaho, in a home with his wife. His name is Clarence Vickery, and at the very end of the interview, his statement is profound, and I hope you listen to it. And so if you've got it all queued up and ready to go, Craig, I'd ask you to play Clarence Vickery on KKFT.
Let me introduce to you another D-Day vet. It's an honor to speak to Clarence Vickery, who is in Chubbuck, Idaho. And Clarence is a friend of Brad Anderson. Anderson, Dorn and Rader, a sponsor of our broadcast this morning. And Brad told me the story of how you two know each other. And if I can, Clarence, I'd like to get a little bit of a background on you. Where'd you grow up?
In LaBarge, Wyoming.
LaBarge, Wyoming. That's a...
Most of my life in LaBarge, Wyoming.
And you joined the military at what age?
I was just out of high school, about 20 years old.
And what year was that?
In 1943.
1943. So you joined when the war was going on, and most people did that. And was it the Army you were in, Clarence?
Yes.
What'd you do in the Army?
I was in communications with the 56th Signal Battalion, and I in the D-Day invasion.
Now, were you shipped over to England? How soon before D-Day? Or
no, I was in England a year before D-Day.
When you were deployed over there, did you know in advance that the invasion was coming? You just didn't know the exact date?
Yes, I knew that eventually that there would be an invasion, and I was being trained to take part in that invasion.
What exactly did you do, and what was your job title? You said communications, right?
No, it was communication, mostly field wire and switchboards. Our job was to keep communication between division headquarters and front lines.
As D-Day approached, and of course it was delayed by a day because of the weather, tell me about what you were doing, what was going through your head at that time.
Well, we knew that we were going to make the invasion. They told us that, and they prepared us to load out on a ship at Southampton, England, and from there we crossed the channel, and we had equipment to take in. We had to wait till they got a trail built or road safe road to travel ashore, and so we didn't land as early as we was supposed to.
And the channel was really rough that morning, wasn't it?
Yes, it got rough. It wasn't bad to start with, but as the day went on, it became really rough.
You know, one thing I should have looked up, Clarence, and I haven't done that yet, and I hope you're okay with me calling you Clarence. I'd be happy to address you more formally. You certainly deserve it. Do you remember what day of the week, June 6th, 1944, was? I should have looked it up. I haven't looked it up yet.
I don't remember the day. It was a day of the week. All I know is it was June 6th.
Do you remember what beach you landed on?
Omaha.
You landed on Omaha.
We landed on Omaha Beach.
What time of the day did you do that? Do you remember?
It was a nice, bright, sunshiny day.
When you landed, was there still a lot of human wreckage, for lack of a better term, on the beach?
Yeah, there was lots of dead young men on the beach, and a lot of them died because they drowned trying to get from their barge to the shore. They had large packs, and they couldn't swim with the packs on, and a lot of them drowned. And
as a young guy, I mean, you were, what, 18, 19 years old at that time?
20 years old.
It had to be a big shot. I mean, you'd been in the military and kind of expected this, but
I always said I was scared, but I was never afraid.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense to anybody. You're scared all the time, but you're trained to do a certain thing, and you do it, and just grit your teeth and go after it.
How often do you think about it?
Well, I tried to forget it after the war was over.
Yeah.
And I never talked about it to anybody until the last 4 or 5 years when they became interested in World War II again. I never even told my parents all the situations I went through because I was trying to forget it. And they didn't ask me, and I didn't tell them.
Certainly understandable. I'm glad you're talking with us this morning. It's Clarence Vickery, who lives in Idaho now, grew up in a small town in Wyoming, and was there on D-Day, on the invasion in Normandy, on June 6th, 1944. And here we are talking about it 70 years later. Tell me about the rest of your service in the military after D-Day. Did you go through Normandy and Holland?
After we landed, we were on an LST. It had the two big old wing doors on the front of it that opened up, ramp that laid down so that equipment could be unloaded. And we went as close to the shore as we could, and they set the ramp down, and we drove off the ramp onto the beach when it was out getting into too much water. And then we went up on the first bench and kind of assembled. We never stopped working from the time we landed for 3 days. We worked continually, and we were completely wore out, and our lieutenant said to us, you deserve a rest. Go to that staging area where they're unloading their barracks bags and stuff and take a rest. We went there at 4 o'clock in the morning, laid down on the ground and went to sleep, and at 6 o'clock the Germans bombed us with anti-personnel bombs, and we lost 13 men. In that bombing, and then we got up and went back to work because it was safer to work than it was to stop.
Clarence, were you in Europe on VE Day and in May?
Yes.
What do you remember about that day? Where were you?
I was stationed in Pilsen, Czechoslovakia. The day that the war was declared over, our unit went into Pilsen, Czechoslovakia. The German soldiers had been notified that the war was over. They could come out of the forest and pile their weapons in big piles, and they sat down on the green grass and waited for instructions. And as we drove by them, We never waved at them. They didn't wave at us. We didn't recognize them. And we went on into Pilsen, Czechoslovakia. And those people were so happy that the Americans had gotten to Czechoslovakia that they were just having dances and food and everything out on the street and just celebrating the best they could.
We always talk about what you guys and the World War II generation did for the United States of America. Imagine the people living in Europe and the freedom that you brought to them, those countries that were occupied by the Germans, and you guys gave them their freedom.
Yes.
That's perfect. That's exactly the greatest generation right there, folks. Yes, was his answer. Clarence Vickery is our guest. He is speaking to us from Idaho. It's the 70th anniversary of the D-Day invasion. He was involved in that. You're listening to 99.1 FM Talk. And Clarence is featured in a DVD. It's the Idaho State Journal's newest documentary. It's called World War II and Eastern Idaho. And you can get information, email info@PocatelloFilmSociety.com. Clarence, what do you think of being in a documentary?
Well, yes. I have a tape on that. And I'm interviewed. Oh, they made a DVD of that program.
Yeah.
And I'm part of it.
Okay, that's Eastern Idaho's Role in World War II. It's a documentary. And Clarence Vickery, who's our guest here on D-Day, the 70th anniversary on 99.1 FM Talk. It's an honor to be able to speak to you, and maybe one of these days we'll be able to look at that DVD.
Yeah.
You've lived a full life, Clarence. What's your age today, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 92 plus. I was 92 in 31st of March.
Well, a belated happy birthday to you, 92 years old and a survivor of D-Day and a hero that served on D-Day in World War II. And you've lived a long life. I hope it's been a happy one for you. I hope you, besides all the tragic memories of World War II, I'm sure you lost a lot of friends. I hope you've been able to enjoy your life.
I have. I've lived a happy life. I've married a nice lady, and we got married after the war. I didn't want to be tied down during the war, so I ignored getting married. And when I came home, my wife was still free and single, and we got together and got married the 2nd of May in 1946. We're still married. We celebrated our 68th anniversary this year on May 2nd.
Clarence, I was speaking to a Navy man by the name of Buster Schaaf just earlier today, and he, too, just celebrated his 68th anniversary, like you, waited till he got out and married his sweetheart from his hometown. I'm so happy that you're still around to be able to talk to us. Again, appreciate what you did for the country, and we just honor you and glad you could participate in our broadcast this morning on KKFT. What's your wife's name?
Mary Evelyn Elder. We're still married and happy of enjoying it.
We really appreciate what you did and for you to be able to spend some time with us this morning on the radio. And what are some of the best memories that you have from going through what you went through in the military? Was it the brotherhood, the people you served with?
The people I served with are like brothers to me today. I'm still in contact with them through the newsletter that they put out every 3 months. It's they ask each veteran to write a letter, and it's put in all the letters are printed and mailed back to us, so we have contact with each other.
Clarence, it's an honor to speak to you, and I appreciate your wife allowing us. What's your wife's name again?
Mary.
I appreciate Mary letting you speak to us today, and just want to, again, thank you, and we admire you and what you did. And we really, really appreciate you taking the time to visit with us this morning.
Yeah, I hope they don't forget us from now on.
We will not let that happen. Believe me, we won't let it happen. Thank you, Clarence, so much.
You bet.
Okay, bye-bye.
Live from Normandy on the 70th anniversary of D-Day, honoring those who served.
When you walk up that gangplank, you know you're gone. As you pull out of harbor and you pass the Statue of Liberty, will I ever be coming back? I don't know. You know you're in the parachute troops. You're going to be jumping behind the enemy lines. What do you expect? You have no idea. That'll make anybody stand and search his soul for a few minutes.
This is KKFT 99.1 and AM 1300 and 102.5 KCMY.
Well, to me, D-Day would be one of those holy crap days because, you know, here's a bunch of guys running onto a beach that they know is going to be held strong, and yet they're digging deep for courage in a place that they might not have never known they had. And they're doing it not for themselves, but for their country. And you look back at the patriotism of the military, we had a lot of guys that were joining even before the age they were supposed to be. Guys were trying to get into the military. Guys wanted to serve for this country. We had such a great country. And, you know, today you look back at that, you just say, wow, they had to really find courage there where I don't know if we could find that today. I have heard from a couple of the World War II vets that have been involved in Pearl Harbor and other places associated with the war that they said their attitude has changed today. They would not defend the country the way they had back in that time. And you look at the change in there, and unfortunately, we're not as united of a country as we used to be. Today, we stand more divided. We don't have a distinct one goal for our entire country. And that division, unfortunately, keeps us from growing greater. You know, the sacrifice that those men made for us is part of what made our country great. Without that, who knows where we'd be today. We stood up, they grabbed their bootstraps by the heels, and they went right after it. You know, it's a courage and a dedication that, you know, we have to be thankful for. We have to look back at our country and where we're at and the strength that we've had and the comfort we've had without war and here in our country, and just thank them for that, because it was through their sacrifices that we are where we are today.
Alan Rose, he hit the nail on the head there in that it's so different. But one thing that was so surprising and encouraging to me, I was so heartened by the fact that walking around the memorial yesterday and the cemetery, thousands of French people with French children there. In the village that I'm in, the posters, Normandy, Liberation. So the French are celebrating, and they do know the sacrifice and what it cost America, Britain, and Canada, and all of the countries, all of the Allied troops. They do appreciate it. Yeah, here's some negative thoughts about Parisians and Paris, but the French people, they do celebrate today and liberation. And so that was one of the things that really struck me yesterday, is how many French people, French children, as well as a lot of British over here as well. Of course, it's a six-hour boat ride over across the channel. So that was very heartening to me. And one of the things that Clarence said right at the end of the interview is, don't let them forget us. And again, yesterday, the few veterans that were there, some walking, some in wheelchairs, one of them in particular along the walk, which is just up from Omaha Beach, right at the edge of the cemetery, 20, 30, 40 people gathered around them, beautiful women as well, wanting their photos with the soldier. And the soldier would, this one in particular, would hand a photo to the person that got a photo with them of him in his uniform when he was 18, 19 years old. Some of the soldiers walking around, we've got a couple of them, a character, in fact, from Tennessee And he is coming up a little bit later. I know the format clock will not be followed this morning. So, Craig, I'm going to call out to you a couple of things. I want to share with you some conversations we had with the Normandy Veterans Association members. These were British people. And also, the first one you'll notice in particular, his wife. In my conversation with him, he always wanted to return to his wife that he lost about 5 years ago. So, Craig, if you've got that queued up, would you play Henry Grew? And he was part of the British Navy.
Where were you on VE Day when victory was declared? Where were
Well, I'm afraid I got a bit tipsy. I come home, left barracks, got up into London by Piccadilly and Leicester Square, and forgot to go home. When I did get home, I got a real trousing. You never forget that.
Yeah.
Really lovely. My wife was a lovely woman. Yeah. Beautiful.
He kept returning to the conversation of he was missing his wife. His children were there with him, but he was a character, and as I said, the champagne was flowing and the British were having a good time. Reg Stevens, Light Attack Regiment, the Royal Artillery, and participating in shooting down a plane. And Craig, Reg Stevens, please.
What did you do on D-Day?
On D-Day, I spent the morning bailing out the boat we drowned.
Were you coming in on a Higgins boat?
Yeah, we were coming in. We should have been the first airmen of the Marine Commandos. Mm-hmm. But in fact, the boat drowned, and somehow they asked for volunteers, but all the gunners were so sick, I was the only one that could stand, so I did that with a Marine commando. Mm-hmm. And we bailed and bailed and bailed till we were completely exhausted. I nearly got washed overboard, my hat disappeared, and, well, somehow something crashed into it during the night, awful bang, and the shout went out, jump for it. And the gunner that was leaning up against the tank with me said, let the effing thing go down. I'm going down with it. I can't take any more. They were so violently seasick.
And one of the things also that in a book called The Boys of Bedford, when they pull up on shore, and of course, as miserable as they were because the sea was so rough, and they saw some of the dead soldiers on the beach, I remember a comment in particular was, at least they are not sick anymore, or something to that effect. And one quick last little audio bite, after I talked to Reg Stevens, a very distinguished Englishman, was that his wife Shirley came up to me immediately after, and it kind of explains the importance of the 70th anniversary, but one other thing about soldiers talking about what happened to them. Craig, Shirley Stevens, please. Shirley Stevens, you were saying that Reg did not open up?
No. I've been married to Reg for many years, as you can appreciate. I knew very little about what happened to him during the war. Sometimes he would talk about the funny things, but nothing about the serious things and the horror that they went through. And it was only when we returned to Normandy for the 65th commemoration, we travelled with a group of air training cadets, and quite naturally they wanted to talk to the veterans, and he opened up to them, and I learnt more on that coach journey in all our married life.
5 years ago.
Yes. Oops, here
we go again. A pause for the airplane to go over. It's important for you to be here today, obviously.
It's very important that the veterans are here today because it will be the last commemoration, major commemoration. You've got to understand that these men are 90 years old plus.
Yes.
And for them, the travelling becomes more difficult. And also, in many ways, it becomes more poignant for them because they return to Normandy, to their mates' graves, to remember them. And yet, they do remember them, but it becomes more poignant because they've had a life. Reg's one particular friend died, he was 20. So it becomes more difficult in lots of ways when they stand in some of the cemeteries. But they are determined to come back. Whether we will have the opportunity to return again obviously depends on how well Reg keeps and whether we can, you know, get back here.
And that is Shirley Stevenson. As she said, it wasn't until 5 years ago on the 65th anniversary that her husband started talking about the bad stuff that happened. And hopefully from today you'll get a honoring of the fallen and a tribute to the veterans that are still with us and a thank you. And if you know of a veteran, please talk to them, find out about their lives. And I find it so interesting that Reg, who is now 91 years old, didn't start talking about this until 5 years ago. You're listening to 99.1 FM Talk, as well as KCMY 102.5 FM, and also a special thanks to America Matters Media. We are simulcast on 101.3 FM, and this is a special tribute to our soldiers. It's a live broadcast from Normandy, France, standing within 30 feet or so from the sand at the town of Olgut. It's a special broadcast from Normandy, France on 99.1 FM Talk.
Something was wrong with you if you weren't in the service in those days. It was just what you had to do.
So there's four guys that were with me on D-Day who did have nothing but a jump knife when they landed. So we had a hope scrounge. Worked out for all of us. Later on, we run across somebody who had been killed, and you take his weapon, and that's how you get a weapon for D-Day.
You're listening to a special live broadcast from the beach at Normandy on the 70th anniversary of D-Day, June 6th, 1944, on 99.1 FM Talk.
Friday morning, June 6th, as our broadcast from Normandy continues on the 70th anniversary of D-Day, once again, Jerry Evans.
Thank you, Craig. And once again, beautiful place in France, Normandy. And again, I want to emphasize that the people of France, they know the sacrifice. They're celebrating today. It is pretty much a holiday for them. And of course, we were at Omaha Beach yesterday. My timing was impeccable in that I'm not even trying to get anywhere near there today with Putin, the Ukraine president, Queen Elizabeth, and President Obama speaking there today. He was there on the 65th. I was walking downstairs today and here in the home, and the French cook here was listening to a broadcast, and Obama was on the air at that time. Again, it just shows you the French people know the sacrifice of Americans and the British and the Canadian troops and all of the Allied troops that fought to give them their freedom. If you read a little more, though, you'll find that when the Germans occupied, or when they invaded in 1940, there was occupied France, and then there was the Vichy, where the puppet government was set up in France. And in a lot of cases, other than the day after D-Day, D-Day plus one, it was really just an inconvenience. No fuel, there were card rationing for food and that sort of thing. It was an inconvenience. Of course, the day after D-Day, not too far from where I'm standing here, the Germans did kill 600 people in a village, again, not too far from here. One other thing, and I know we're going to run out of time here really quick. I want to get another veteran that I spoke to actually before I came over here, and then we'll get to the D-Day veterans that were at Omaha Beach yesterday. And this is once again, just a wonderful man, a character, married 68 years. Charles Buster Schaaf is from Virginia. We spoke to him just before we headed over here. And Craig, if you could pull up Charles for us, or Buster, as he told me to refer to him as Buster, so I did throughout the interview. I am on the phone with a very special guest. It's been my goal since we announced that we were going to do this broadcast from Normandy on D-Day to speak to a D-Day veteran, and I have one on the phone with me right now. This is Charles Buster Schaaf, and he's told me, Junior, and he has told me that I can refer to him as Buster, and I'm honored to talk to you, Buster, and have you on the phone with me this morning.
Well, I'm delighted to be talking to you.
Well, first, before we talk about you and D-Day and everything, I spoke to a lovely woman that answered the phone. Why don't you tell me who that was?
That was my wonderful wife of almost 68 years.
So you must have gotten home from the war and then married your sweetheart.
That's right. I met her while I was in the Navy, and she was living in Richmond with her aunt, and I met her on a blind date.
Well, congratulations. Not too many people stay married for 6 years these days, let alone 68. I hope it's been a great marriage for you.
Sure is.
Well, you're a lucky man, and I'm sure she feels like she's a lucky woman. Let's talk about your military career. What exactly did you do for the Navy?
Well, I was attached to an LST. The first one I was attached to was LST 291.
And when did you leave for your staging area in England? How soon before D-Day?
We left in the early part of April, and the early part of May, we arrived in Plymouth, England.
You know, and back in that time, not too many people would think about it, but my wife's dad was in the Navy and also got scarlet fever when he was in Chicago at the Naval Training Station in Chicago. It was just one of the things that happened back then that you don't even hear about now.
That's right. And it was rather unusual.
When did you arrive in Plymouth, England? How soon was that before D-Day?
Less than a month, but we had to unload the LCT that we carried over on our main deck.
We've been talking about on the radio station out here how the original D-Day date was June 5th, and because of the weather, it was postponed. But even though the weather was a little better, the sea or the channel there was even rougher, wasn't it?
It was quite rough, and we, of course, our LCVPs are just a 36-foot boat. It was right rough. And all of the larger ships were anchored about 10 miles out.
Right, and you guys took these in.
Beyond the range of the guns.
And you guys, would this be a Higgins boat? Is this something different than a Higgins?
That's a Higgins boat.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, the boat was originally designed originally by Andrew Jackson Higgins, who ran a boatyard in New Orleans, Louisiana.
General Eisenhower credited the Higgins boat with winning the war. Did you man the craft? You brought soldiers into the beach?
Yes, we had a four-man crew on the boat. And I was the engineer on the boat. We had a coxswain, an engineer, and two seamen that made up the crew of the small boat. We could carry as many as 36 men to the beach, but we usually carried about 30 men.
Yeah, anybody that has seen any of the Hollywood movies or any of the documentaries of any of the D-Day landings, they see these big things that almost looks like a giant jack from ball and jacks games that you played as a kid. And a lot of those had mines strapped to them as well.
Well, fortunately, the one we hit did not have a mine where we hit it anyway. And it just tore a hole in the boat, and fortunately, we were close enough to the beach to back off the hedgehog, and we actually stayed on, lived on the beach, you might say, from the 6th of June till the 1st of July, and then we went back to the ship.
Buster Schaaf is my guest on KKFT, a D-Day veteran who was on the LCVPs that took troops into Omaha Beach on D-Day and was there 5 minutes after H hour. I believe it started at 6:30 or 6:32 in the morning is when the first craft arrived. Buster, there was one of those boats also sunk. Did you happen to see that?
Well, I didn't see it. Of course, heard that some of them did. The water was awfully rough, and with a full load on, we were sitting very low in the water, and taking on quite a bit of water. The one that you were reading about was the one that Roy Stevens was on.
And I believe it was Roy that had a twin brother that got killed.
Right.
Yeah, and found his, as macabre as it sounds, found his brother in a body bag as they were starting to bury them there on the beach in Normandy.
And one of the many thousands of sad stories that come from that day. And I don't want you to talk about anything, Buster, that you feel uncomfortable talking about. But you were landing there 5 minutes after everything started. There had to be just massive casualties on the beach.
Well, yeah, after during our second and third trips in, we saw right much wreckage on the beach and bodies laying around that they hadn't gotten up yet. And it was, of course, we knew what we had to do, and we basically did it. And we could see these bodies and injured people laying around, and it was bothersome, but we still had to do it.
I got to tell you, we really admire what you guys did back then, and I'm so happy that you're around to talk to me about it today. It's an honor to be able to speak to you. And as people get older and we realize when we start to lose some family members that we don't talk to them about this, a lot of those veterans from that era, including yourself, didn't really come home and talk to their families or their friends about it very much.
It was somebody just didn't talk about it. But then when they started talking about the memorial at Bedford, and I got involved in that, and I served as a docent over there, well, from the time we opened it in 2001 until about, maybe the middle of 2012. But as far as my Navy career, we went back to our LST, and it was, we stayed and ran a ferry service from England to France, carrying vehicles and goods and so forth into Normandy, and we ended up going into all five beaches, not all at the same time, but during our shipped into the beaches until they closed the beaches on November of 1944. And we left England then, about the middle of June of 45.
It was quite an experience for you at your young age, I'm sure.
By that time I was 19. It was quite an experience for a 19-year-old.
You know, it's really amazing. The 19-year-old from that generation versus not all, but most of the 19-year-olds today. And what you guys did, what you signed up for, what you provided to this country, which we enjoy today, is something that we really appreciate and admire and respect you guys for.
Well, we are enjoying it also. And then in March of 46, I was discharged. And, of course, glad to get out of the Navy. And I'm 89 years old, so it's getting there.
You've lived a full life. And, I want to go back and thank you for what you did and all of you guys back then, what you were doing at your age. It's been a real honor to speak to you. Charles Buster Schaefe from Virginia, 89 years old, married for 68 years to his wife, and raised three sons. By the way, one of my sons was a corpsman and was attached to a recon unit in the Marines.
Corpsman vital that day in saving some of the soldiers there on the beach, the wounded, and are some of the bravest men in the military. They did a great job on D-Day, on Omaha Beach and Utah Beach that day.
Oh, great. Yes, they did. They did a magnificent job.
Well, listen, we really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us. It's been really interesting. It's what a life that you've lived. So we thank you very much, Buster. It's been an honor to speak to you. I'm going to try to get out to Bedford to that D-Day Memorial one of these years, and maybe even as soon as next year.
You can, because it is a very, very interesting place, and it gives a very good picture of World War II.
Well, I look forward to it, Buster. A D-Day veteran landed on Omaha Beach 5 minutes after what was called the start of the end of the war. It's been an honor to be able to speak to you. I'm so glad you're still alive. As you know, the Normandy Veterans Association, this is the last year that they will have any sort of ceremony. People will continue to visit Normandy years from now, but it's people like you that'll be talked about and honored over the years. We really appreciate what you did.
Well, thank you, and thank you for calling, and enjoyed talking with you.
And hopefully we'll see you in Bedford one of these days. Thank you, Buster.
I hope so.
Charles,
let us know when you're coming.
We will. Charles Buster Schaaf, a D-Day veteran that landed on Omaha Beach 5 minutes after H-hour. It's been an honor, Buster. Thank you so much. God bless you.
Thank you, sir.
We were scattered all over the peninsula, practically. So it was quite a confused situation, but we were better prepared for it than the Germans were. The Germans didn't know where we were.
Whereas on the beach, those people coming in on those boats, those Germans had those big guns aimed right at them, you know, and just waiting on them. Oh, they had it tough. They had it tough. I admire everyone of them.
Live from Normandy on the 70th anniversary of D-Day, honoring those who served. This is KKFT 99.1.
Yeah, I just brought these flags in a flag case. When my both my parents are World War II veterans, both of them Navy veterans. They were from the same hometown, so it wasn't like they met in the Navy or anything. It was just coincidental. And so when my father died, they draped the coffin with the flag and then folded it and gave the flag to my mother. She died 2 years later this year. And so when they folded the flag, I'm the oldest child and I'm the only veteran in the family, so they gave the flag to me. And then my siblings decided I should have my father's flag as well, so I just got them put in the case, and I'm trying to figure out where I want to put them. It's interesting. My father was a radio operator, and my mother was a teletype operator. So when I went into the Army, I became a radio teletype operator. I told them it was in the genes. I just got this card. One of my parents' friends, who's about my mother's age, he and his wife are in a home in Idaho. So he sent a sympathy card, and I responded, and then he sent me another card. And this is really typical of these World War II veterans. He said, I'm a World War II veteran as well as your father, and I served in Europe. I was in the invasion at Omaha Beach on D-Day. I served in France, Luxembourg, Belgium, Germany, and Czechoslovakia. We went into Czechoslovakia the day the war was declared over. I saw some terrible things and went through some terrible times then. And then he said, I know you served in Vietnam. I'm happy that you never got hurt. But that's very typical of these guys. That's all they'll say. I saw terrible things. Terrible things happened. And they don't try to extract sympathy because they went through this. It's like it's locked in a separate compartment in their minds. So did they suffer PTSD? Everybody who's been in a combat situation has suffered PTSD. But that generation tended to lock that away, put it behind them, and never talk about it. And to some degree, you know, you wish they would, because you need to preserve that. But that was the way they dealt with it, so they could raise families and work in the world And so you have to appreciate that in those guys. They went through some things that even our soldiers today don't go through. It wasn't, you know, fighting on D-Day and then loading everybody who was left up so that they could go to France and Belgium and Luxembourg and Germany and Czechoslovakia. They do their year, and then they at least get some respite from it. That wasn't the case in that war. Yeah, my parents are Merrill Anderson and Annette Anderson. They both served through the end of the war, and my mother, she was in the Waves, and her term of service wasn't up for about a year after the war ended. Then they met and married. Clarence Vickery is the guy who was the soldier on Omaha Beach. And so because of, you know, what you're doing, it's kind of brought that to my mind. And so I've arranged to send him a basket of goodies on June 6th to share with his friends there in the home in Idaho.